I don't know about you, but I have always enjoyed parades. I have memories of when I was very young, being bundled up and taken out into the cold for holiday parades, either Thanksgiving parades or Christmas parades. When I was older, I marched in parades as part of the marching band at my school. Then I became drum major, and then parades got really interesting. When we lived out in New England, veterans parades especially were a big deal. There were fife and drum corps there that have a history that goes back several hundred years, and they would come and march down the street with live cannon that they would pull along, and every few blocks they would set it off. They would just shoot a round of blanks from the cannon. And, you know, it sent a thrill through the crowds, always made the children and the old men cry. I remember having to take Caitlin home from such a parade because of the cannon fire. It was wonderful. I really thought it was great. One of the favorite parades that I witnessed was just a couple of years ago in England, a little village where we were visiting, when as a part of the village's annual fete, the whole town went on parade and just marched around in a huge loop the whole village. Toddlers and grandparents, shopkeepers and spaniels, they were in this together. It was a strange yet somehow coherent collection of pilgrims. But you know, even better than parades, I love processions. And there is a difference. Because processions are marches that have a destination. They're going somewhere. They have a purposeful end. They have a place of promise to which they're headed. Not just to go by a review stand and then just sort of dissipate, but they are headed somewhere. They are going somewhere. Like King David leading the people of God in procession up to the temple. It was a parade, yes, but with determination and with destiny. You know, on a day like this, we think about all the saints and all the people of God. I'm reminded that we are in procession together. And we note it in special ways today. It's a commemoration, a celebration of all those made righteous by the Lord throughout all time, in all places, known and unknown. Those still living, and those who are with Christ. And our scriptures today underscore themes of this reality, of our interdependence, of our movement together towards God's kingdom, in a way of proceeding, of being in procession now with the kingdom around us, but into the kingdom fully realized. I mean, the group today touched on that in the study of Matthew. Now, you can't have a parade by yourself, can you? I don't know. I think it generally requires more than one person. But if you head out on a parade and no one is with you, you're probably going for a walk. You're going on walkabout, right? But that's not a bad thing. But it's not a procession. Because when we are together in relationship, living life, sharing in the joys and pain, and the need and the bounty, then we have a sense of what it is to celebrate the procession of God's people, God's saints. And this morning I'm using this term saints in a general description, not just those who have attained some special or miraculous power or existence, but all of those who are responding to God's call, who are made his through grace and faith and enter by the streams of living water, those are the saints. You are saints. That applies to you today. Jesus was not alone, and we get such a powerful sense of that today in the death of Lazarus. Jesus had family. He had friends. He had close followers. Now, Mary and Martha and their brother Lazarus were close friends of Jesus. In verse 5 of the chapter we heard from today, it says that he loved them. He went to their home often. He had spent time with them in Bethany, and he knew them well. They were close. And while he is away with his disciples, Lazarus becomes ill, and the sisters send word to him to come. They said, come, your friend is, and our brother is dying. But he delays, and by the time he arrives, Lazarus has died and is already buried. And Mary is speaking to him. We read this today. Lord, if you'd been here, my brother would not have died. When Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. Jesus wept. Then they said, see how he loved him. Their grief in the loss of Lazarus, their brother and friend, this village coming around them, their grief is overwhelming, as grief is. And Jesus is not immune to their grief and to his own grief. He doesn't stand apart. He isn't isolated. He isn't unmoved, but he's deeply troubled in a way that touches him at the core of who he is, the core of his being. And he also grieves. In fact, he weeps. You know, we used to joke about this a little bit as kids and young people in the church, especially when we had to do scripture memorization. We thought it might be easier to remember the shorter verses, and this is one we always try to remember first. Jesus wept. But being children, we didn't understand that the shortest verse sometimes is one of the deepest. It's a small puddle, yes, but it's 1,000 feet deep. Be careful before you jump across it. Such is this verse. See, he already knows that Lazarus will be raised. He's been telling people that. He tells his disciples, he said, I'm going to wake him up. Well, they misunderstand. And he'd already told the sisters, I am resurrection and I am life. Do you believe you'll see him again? He had already intended in his mind, in his heart, to do this. But he didn't push through and say, hey, come on, guys, you know, be happy. I'm gonna do the thing here. I'm going to save the day. Though he already knows all of that, he weeps. Because he is in relationship with them. He is close to them. And he is grieved by the loss of Lazarus. See, when we consider the procession of saints, we begin by affirming, one of the things we affirm is the reality of Christ's incarnation. That he stepped into the parade of humanity and he walks among us. Without him, there would be no procession at all. There'd just be a retreat into exile. With him in our midst, we have a glimpse of our need to carry each other, to feel each other's grief and joy, each other's doubt and confidence. Through his tears, through the tears of Jesus touched by the death of a close friend, we see that we must not go it alone, that we can't afford to do our own thing. If anyone could have stepped back and said, I'm not going to let this pain touch me, he could have chosen to do that. He did not. See, for Jesus, it was dangerous to return to Bethany. They'd already tried to kill him there. The disciples, when they heard they were going back, they weren't too pleased. What? You're kidding, right? But the Lord knew that he was tied to this family, that he was sojourning with them. Couldn't he have uttered a healing word from a safe distance? You know, just extend his hands toward Bethany and say the word. Sure. But the incarnation was never about safety. And our journey together as the saints of God is also about walking the costly path and not walking it alone. This is why I appreciate so much our small group ministry and the focus on the one another's of Scripture that Sally has encouraged us in. It's something that saints, the people of God, offer to the world. The realization that we are in deep need of God and of each other. Isolation, meaninglessness, is so much a part of the journey of the individual. of going it alone, walking alone against all others. You know, sometimes we do think of individual saints, and we think of examples of great pious living, people like Mother Teresa and so on. But the saints together, all the people of God, marching through history to God's kingdom, offer a witness to the world of the gospel, that they are together. People find the truth of the gospel in the fact that we love one another. During several summers in the 1950s, there was an American minister, a Methodist minister, who served in the American church in Paris. After service one day, he noticed a man in a dark suit who was surrounded by others, people talking with him and seeming to admire him. The author, Albert Camus, had been coming to church. And first, to hear Marcel Dupré play the organ, that was his initial interest. But later, to hear this pastor, Howard Mumma's sermons. And this pastor, Howard Mumma, became friends with the existentialist Camus.